Call this meeting to order of the Board of Education. Mr. Kenwood, would you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
My pleasure.
Oh, guys, usually I bring it up here. What's going on here?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mrs. Stucker, will you please call the roll?
Here.
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 Here. Here. All right, at this time we have public participation. Are there any members of the public who wish to address the board? Seeing none. First up, we have presentations, reports, and initiative updates.
This is our annual presentation at Forest Glen, and we are thrilled to be here. We're thrilled to be here, and I'm not going to speak too long because I don't have much voice left, but I'll introduce Mary Hornacek, who will introduce this evening's presentation.
Good evening, and welcome to Forest Glen. It's always good to have all of you here. Last spring, the DuPage County Curriculum Directors met with some examples of schools that were taking their teams to the next level as they discussed professional learning community best practices. At the same time, our staff surveys were communicating a desire for more effective teaming between staff and leadership, staff and staff, teachers and parents, school and community. When having a discussion with Karen and Ann, they suggested the Team Clock Institute might be a viable option for us. After reading Team Clock, A Guide to Breakthrough Teams, and contacting Steve Ritter, it was decided that we engage with the Team Clock Institute to assist us in taking our grade level, department teams, and our building teams to the next level, with a desire to become more effective as a professional learning community team. The Forest Glen PLC wants to become better at building a culture for staff collaboration, creating time to collaborate, and focusing on student learning. Steve has worked with professional sports teams, businesses, and schools to create more effective and collaborative teams. He's worked with us since July. Tonight, he will share some information with you about Team Clock and our journey.
Hi. So what I do for a living is I help people become really effective, really strong teams. And a lot of the teams that seek my services are strong teams who want to be taken to the next level, or teams that are going through a significant amount of change who want to have that kind of ushered through in an effective way. And so I work with, this year, about six districts in the Chicago area and one district nationally. KIPP School is a charter school nationally. And we do these kinds of things. So I want to walk you very quickly through what the model is. When Ann and Karen and Mary invited me to join you, part of it was because there was good fit between what the King Clock Institute teaches and what Forest Glen wanted in supporting what professional learning communities are supposed to do for children and for families and for communities. So I'm going to walk you very quickly through the model. It looks very complicated, but it's not. It's really the 12 points of a clock. And if you look at 12 o'clock and 6 o'clock to begin with, it begins with what it takes to become what I call attached or connected. And so in a marriage, you know what that feels like. On a sports team, they call that being in the zone. In a school community, that means everyone's collaborating, everyone's connected. And so in the model, the bigger the dot, the closer people are, the more collaborative people are, the more attached people are. And at the top, at 12 o'clock, is loss. That's when there's some kind of a breakdown in that connection. And the reason the dots get bigger as you move up to 12 o'clock is that there's a relationship between the degree of connection you have with someone and the amount of loss you feel in the event that something doesn't go well in that relationship. And the people make choices every day in the way they interact with their teammates about the amount of investment they make in those connections and therefore the consequences of that when things shift or when things change in a team or in a family or on a board of education, or in a school faculty. Then at 3 o'clock and 9 o'clock, you have dependence at 3 o'clock. That's the structure of a team. Those are kind of the rhythms and rules and goals and norms of a team. These are how teams manage conflict. These are how teams come up with norms that they can live with and move around into the work of their team with a common understanding about what they're there for. The other side is independence. That's when a team takes that structure and uses it as a platform from which to leverage creativity, innovative thinking, taking smart risks, doing things that other teams don't do, creating new things. And in the same way that the dots get bigger as you go to the outside, there's a relationship between the degree to which you buy into the norms and goals of a relationship and a team and the strength of the platform from which you then become innovative and creative. And so ideally, in a strong team, there's a strong buy-in into the structure and the rules and the rhythms and the leaders and the followers and the norms of a team. And from that, you leverage the differences of that team and be creative and innovative and try things that are new. So if you move around the clock in the beginning of a relationship, you begin by deciding to what degree I'm going to invest in this team, and then you test that. And if that tests well and everyone's accountable for respectful professional interactions, you handle differences well, you handle conflict well, you buy into a structure that then gets tested again in the trust phase. Trust is really accountability for doing what you said you were going to do. So if I agree to the following norms or goals and I do those, I get closer and more cohesive with my group as we become more trusting, and you achieve what we call attachment. From there, we kind of trade in the comfort and fun of being connected for something that's a little more scary, and that's taking smart risks and being creative and being innovative and trying things. And that leads to change. And change generally means you have to move away from what was, distance from that, lose that, and reinvest in something new, and around it goes. You really have to just think about the changes that have happened in this district over the years, the changes that have happened on this board over the years. You can think about the changes that have happened in your families over the years. My youngest child is now off at college. We have an empty nest. My wife and I are home alone like we were 30 years ago, before we had kids. It's the same, but it's different because we're older now. That's a change as well, and it goes around and around and around. That's the model. The simple version of the model is that there is an investment phase where everyone buys into the norms of the team. There's a trust phase where people learn how to behave in a way that's collaborative and cohesive. There's an innovation phase where amazing things happen. And then there's a distancing phase where people find a way to react to the changes that you've created by being innovative. And so that's what we seek to measure here at Forest Glen or with any team we work with. And so Forest Glen took a survey at the front end of the semester that said there were 40 questions. Here are some examples. Do we have a common vision for the school? Are we rewarded for taking smart risks? Some of these, if you answer them positively, it's a good thing. Some of them, if you answer them positively, it's a negative thing. And so words and actions that can undermine the health of the team are tolerated. We would want that to be a strongly disagree answer. School leadership supports the status quo, discourages risk-taking. You would want that to be negatively responded to. Staff members hold each other accountable for managing change effectively. These are examples of the types of questions that we ask that give us a flavor of whether Forest Glen was strong in their investment phase, strong in their trust phase, strong in their innovation phase, and strong in their distancing phase, or where their vulnerabilities were. So based on that, the team engaged beginning in September in work to strengthen all of those areas based on those baseline survey results. So the goal was to empower a team that had strong norms and values and goals, to have more trust and accountability in the interactions, to empower innovative teaching methods, and then to facilitate nimble adaptation to change when it occurs. So they did a good job. What happens in my world is that I have about 3 or 4 months to make a difference. And I need to see a difference in the metrics of the team, and then I need to see a difference in the kind of business metrics of the team. So if it's a school, you expect whatever collaboration occurs between staff to have an effect on the kids and the way they're learning. If it's a sports team, you expect them to win more games. If it's a business, you expect more activity in the pipeline or profit. If it's a community organization, you expect better morale or workplace culture. So here, I'm looking for both quantitative metrics and qualitative metrics. I want to see a measurable difference in all those areas, and then I want to know qualitatively how people feel as well. And so this team experienced statistically significant improvement in all four categories, and this was of the six districts in the Chicago area that I'm working with this year, this was the only district that had statistically significant improvement in all four areas. Some districts had improvement, but I couldn't, it didn't have, for those of you who are math-minded, a p-value that was low enough to qualify as statistically significant. So here's, for the data lovers, here's how that looked. In the investment phase, which is to what degree does the faculty buy into the norms and values of this school? We had an 8%+ improvement in the average response, and a lower standard deviation means you have greater congruence. A larger standard deviation means that you have more factioning amongst your team, that the responses are more spread out. A lower standard deviation means you have more congruence around that. And then 0.05 or less is the threshold for statistical significance. So if you look at the p-values, all of them were statistically significant. In the trust quadrant, measuring people's ability to hold each other accountable for the norms that they agreed upon, again, a 6.8% increase in the average response and a 12% reduction in the standard deviation. The innovation quadrant is your ability to leverage that foundation to do innovative things. And in a school, that means taking grade level teachers and reshuffling the deck differently on behalf of the kids, using professional learning communities in a way that maybe you hadn't thought of a year ago, doing things that are creative and new. Again, a higher average and a lower standard deviation. And then the distancing quadrant measures people's ability to respond to change in a healthy and effective and nimble way. And again, that probably was the area that needed the most work because as Forrest Glenn has experienced a fair amount of change over the last couple of years, we were going to get a lot of benefit from managing some of that as a way to move forward. So seeing a 13% change in that average was welcome. And the person that helps me with my data, there's a way of doing that p-value that abbreviates all those zeros. I said, what does that mean? And she said, well, there's seven zeros before that. It's really, really statistically significant, the amount of change that happened there. Qualitatively, we sent out a survey to staff, and I wanted to include as many as I could, so I know you can't read it way in the back, so I'm going to read it to you because I apologize for the size of the print, but I wanted to include all of these. I appreciate the can-do spirit of these people and their willingness to think creatively. Staff supports each other and tries to create opportunities to help each other participate more fully in the Forrest Glenn life. Part of that began at the beginning of the semester when the team really sat down and said, what are our mission and values, and what is the Forrest Glenn way of doing things? That's usually the way a strong culture gets anchored in the beginning. The true core of this staff is generous, compassionate, proud, dedicated group of professionals, and I'm proud to be among them. The staff as a whole has been very welcoming to me as a new teacher this year. One of the questions that I ask all groups is, how do you welcome new members? So if you get a new member of your Board of Education after the election, or if a teacher leaves or comes, how does that person get ushered into the culture? People are very accommodating and open to new ways of doing things. That's our innovation quadrant. It is a result of active listening and problem solving that these students are able to have more of their needs met each day. It's great to know that we can be creative and compassionate and problem solvers. This is one of the most friendly schools I've been to. That was from somebody who visits many schools around the district. I know I would make friends and do my job well anywhere, but Forrest Glenn is truly my home. So I know these are qualitative, these are reactions, but they happen to match the data. So I thought you should hear about what the faculty is saying about Forrest Glenn this year. So what does that mean? That means that Forestman has positioned themselves to finish the year with strength. And what that usually means with any team is when you're not consumed in working on the infrastructure of your team, you can be fully devoted to delivering what the team is there to do. And with this team, it's about taking care of kids and families and communities. And so it enables, because of value-based norms and more trust and accountability and the innovativeness of this creative team and the resilience as things continually change, all the work get delivered forward to the children and the community the way it's supposed to, as opposed to energy being spent managing the dynamics of a team. Instead, it gets spent delivering to the children and the community. So the examples of that are the current ambassador program that has evolved this year. And next year, there's some designs out of here starting this year around a mentoring program. And essentially, this is your faculty modeling for your children what it means to volunteer, what it means to give of yourself, and what it means to be part of a community and to share your talents. And so in the same way the kids see the teachers doing this effectively, now they're doing it effectively. And so these are photos of some of your children who are taking on volunteerism projects that create a relationship between the school and the community. And their hope is to do that locally this year, but next year to expand to more of a national level, and there are some ambitious children who think they can have a global impact as well. So this is how it works. When you build a healthy, strong, effective team, it enables you to be really creative and innovative and model great things for kids who can then do great things in turn. And that's what Forest Glen proactively took on this year. Do you have any questions? Yes?
You said you had a before and an after aspect of statistical improvement. But what I didn't hear was what were the actions or activities that were done to facilitate
that? Good question. There are actions and activities in each of the four quadrants. So, for example, in the investment quadrant, we spent a fair amount of time looking over the previous document that listed the mission, philosophy, and values of Forest Glen. We looked at the kind of ground rules for the building leadership team and all the documents that define the way people interact with each other. And we challenged every word of every sentence and made sure that all those values and philosophies and missions were actually true roadmaps for the way people were going to conduct themselves in these meetings and together. And where there were opportunities to make changes, we did. And where there were opportunities to endorse what was already done, we agreed to hold each other more accountable for that. And so it was kind of a check of the infrastructure to begin with to make sure that it had the norms and goals in place that were needed to be able to do things like manage differences and conflict respectfully and those kinds of things. Began there. The tougher work was probably the trust quadrant, because that's where if you say something or do something that isn't aligned with those values, I have a responsibility to call you on that, to hold you accountable for that. And that's not very comfortable to do. So we were really asking people to do uncomfortable things. And a few of the folks in the back row will vouch for the fact that I've asked them to do some uncomfortable things. And they have, some formally and some informally. Informal meaning you don't have to have someone come in and facilitate a conversation if you can take care of that on your own. Formal meaning there were plenty of times when I came in and coached those conversations so we could get some things that maybe had been problems for more than just this year straightened out. Then the innovation phase actions were very specific to what professional learning communities are being asked to do across the nation. Teaming differently than you've ever thought about teaming, blending talents together in ways that you normally haven't done, which really takes you out of your traditional role in many ways. And so we're asking people to give up the comfort that they had just been building in the trust phase and do things a little innovative. And then the distancing tasks were really about what has changed in the last couple of years, how have we handled that well, what do we still need to, is there any unfinished business with that that we need to take care of, and that then unveils kind of what we call hot button issues in the school, and good teams take on hot button issues. And so as we move forward, it's only been 7 months, so now we know the work that's next. And what this team has said is we want the next stage of improvement to be a much more dynamic and productive relationship between the faculty and the leadership in the district. That's where they want to focus next. And we've already begun to hammer away at what that actually means. So yes, you want to have a better relationship with leadership. So what does that mean from teacher to principal, from principal to superintendent, from teacher to superintendent, and how does that happen? Does that answer your question?
Well, you talked about some of the coaching. I'm just curious to hear more about what are some of the activities that you have to practice it, otherwise it doesn't, people don't know what to do or don't know how to make it effective as a daily part of their activity. So I'm just curious about some of those activities.
Well, without divulging the kind of personal stuff, there are a number of sub-teams in the school. There are grade level teams, there are specialists, there are early childhood folks, there are language literacy folks, there are reading specialists. Every team has a team within a team. And they unanimously, the faculty chose to devote their SIP days, does that mean something? Student improvement? I devoted 4 hours of every SIP day to be on site. And then these sub-teams had a month ahead of time to sign up for one of those slots. And so there were probably, all told, maybe 10 sub-teams, some grade level teams, some specialty teams, some itinerants, various teams that then devoted a 90-minute period once a month, or a 60-minute period, or a 30-minute period, to say, all right, here are the things that we're struggling with on our team. This person's new, I haven't been accepted on this team yet, or our strengths are so diverse, this person's really technically strong, but this person's stronger with the kids, how do we share those talents? We've got some more business we never took care of, we need to hammer out these issues, but it doesn't affect everyone, can we pull off this group to the side and hammer that out? Does that make more sense? Mm-hmm. So month to month, in these little half hour, 60 minute, 90 minute segments, the sub teams hammered away at old business and current business with the understanding of what a functional, effective team looks like and how they do that.
This wasn't an issue of exercises or things like that. These are real problems
Absolutely.
That you're dealing with.
Absolutely. And some of them old and some of them current as they came up.
It that springboards into my question, which is, you know, you have, in any process like that, you have people who are going to innovate right away and get on board and say, I'm in it, we've been waiting too long, it's time to go. And then you have your group at the back end, which kind of lag behind. And it, you know, the next phase to this, and it, you know, what I like about what you just described to your question, Dan, is how does it embed itself? Because we've been talking a lot at the district level that the changes now need to be deepened, embedded, deepened, et cetera. So what's the next step? You know, we disperse for the summer, more classes, do all those kind of things like our students do. So how do you revive this going into, you know, fall of next year to maintain that momentum?
Steve is going to continue to work with us mm-hmm. next year. So as we have these topics identified that we need to work on, we're going to hit the ground running. We won't have to do the educational piece of what does Team Flag look like. We'll really be rolling up our sleeves. I mean, we've already tackled a number of issues, but mm-hmm. we'll be going deeper with those issues and really building team at a very deep level.
Mm-hmm. You described it perfectly. There's a staggered start. It's like a track meet.
Right.
It's a staggered start. There were sub-teams that got on it immediately and are now joining the fruits of that labor. There are teams who literally a month ago said, is it too late? Because mm-hmm. now it's kind of contagious. Mm-hmm. So there are teams that are now in April where some teams were in October. Mm-hmm. And so everything's kind of staggered. But what's in place is the structure of what healthy, effective teams look like. Mm-hmm. And what's in place is the accountability that everyone has for managing the way they interact with each other in a way that keeps us moving in the right direction. So then we can kind of either aim a low-hanging fruit and say, well, okay, well, here's an easy one. You know, there's been a disagreement between the faculty and the principal about X, Y, and Z. How do you guys want to move forward with this? Who should be in the room, and how do you want to tackle this issue? Mm-hmm. Here's one that may take a couple of years to tackle, but here's the beginning phase of that work. Who wants to work on this over the summer, and then we'll get it engaged more fully in the fall. And then there's everything along that spectrum. And then to your point about kind of reviving this, there's no turnoff. Mm-hmm. We never stop looking. And so Mary and I, despite the fact that we have some summer plans, we'll be in contact throughout the summer.
So in regards to the survey, I mean, how much of it is, you know, self-reported, like this is the way I feel, versus a metric that's an absolute? I mean, does an outside observer looking at it get the same results that the people within it feel, or does it make any difference as long as they feel that way?
It is designed on a Likert scale, and so there's a subjectivity to it, and the way that you bring objectivity to a subjective scale is much like you'd see in a hospital with a pain scale. When they ask you how much it hurts, they put five faces in front of you, and one of them is really grimacing, and the other one's really happy, and you go, well, that one, well, you know, you could have just had a leg amputated and say, I'm fine, and I could have a hangnail and say, I'm in excruciating pain. It doesn't matter the subjective piece. What matters is where our baseline starts, and then whether we go left or right after that. So the objectivity comes in the comparison with the baseline, not so much where the baseline begins. Now,
but to an outside observer, they felt,
well,
what the people within it.
Yeah, well, there's benchmarking. Okay. So this isn't the first school district to do this, and so we've got enough data. So it's not atypical for a school to say, so where do we stand compared to a district, some things like that. And so if I were to, while I was going to do my own informal comparison for you, if I look at all the districts that I'm working with right now, I actually was predicting a harder year at the beginning than it turned out to be. And Forest Glen took this opportunity further than many of its peers did this year. The two best examples of peer benchmarking that I would point to is where people get stuck. What Forest Glen didn't do was get stuck. They just keep working and working and working. Maybe tenacity is one of the main values of this, but Forest Glen just keeps working and keeps working to get better and get better and get better and get better. What one of the peers did this year was they wanted so much to become innovative that they leapfrogged all the other work and now they're paying for what they leapfrogged. Okay. What another peer district did, and I'm not naming names, is that being a cohesive and close and happy felt so good that they didn't want to trade it in for the hard work. And so they stopped. And unfortunately, innovative, creative people are no longer happy there. You know, this is true not just in schools. There are a lot of businesses where people are happy, but they get nothing done. Mm-hmm. So our goal wasn't to create happiness. Mm-hmm. Our goal was to create accountability and trust and appropriate interaction skills so that when the going is tough and we're managing differences and we're trying to leverage those things, it's handled professionally and respectfully and maturely with the talent that people bring to the table. I'm not sure I answered your question. It's a qualitative measure. Metrics allow us to benchmark with other schools internally as well.
So from a teaming perspective, on a spectrum of, you know, highly dysfunctional to really, really functional, when you came in and did your current assessment, where did you place this school in terms of
a little above the middle. So if one is a really dysfunctional, broken team, toxic, broken team, and five is a soaring, amazing, you know, team, this was kind of in the 3 to 3.5 range, which, you know, it's pretty healthy.
Yes, and benchmarked other schools.
Okay. Right, right. Now, you know, my current year's strongest team is upper threes. As a baseline, and we'll probably get to the low fours, just on that Likert scale. If you want to look at that 1 to 5 range, but they've been working at this for a long time. You know, they were an early adopter of this methodology, and they've been hammering this for 4 or 5 years now.
And what's the
what's the value you see for the kids? You know, what are some of the direct measurable value that you see for the kids when this happens?
Well, they are, I always lamented that my school teachers saw my children for more hours, waking hours of the day than I did. So I think about children being exposed to these teachers for 7+ hours a day. The first benefit is that they're being modeled really strong, effective, healthy interaction. And from, you know, at a stage in their lives where I always think of kids at this age as being like sponges that have been squeezed and put next to a puddle. And then when you open them, it sucks up the puddle. What's in the puddle is really important. And so if what's in the puddle are really healthy, strong, adaptive, effective, nimble with change, solid value folks, then that's, while I'm working and my kids are with these teachers, what my kids are soaking in. So it starts there. But then it gets to things like the ambassador program, the mentoring program. Then those kids are going to take these skills, effective team skills, effective relationship skills, and they're going to translate those out into the community with the volunteer projects they're doing, the way that they interact with their brothers and sisters and neighbors, and the way that they bring home. And so, you know, parents ought to see different kids because of what's being modeled for them. And then, you know, ultimately, and this is a longer-term measure, and Forest Plan hasn't been doing this long enough to be able to compare them, and I can give you examples in the business world that make more sense. We want the business metrics of a school to parallel the improvement in the teaming that happened here. So you would expect that things like how many kids are at or above grade level in reading or math or whatever ought to improve as well. Because the history with the Team Clock Institute is that when the team metrics improve, the business metrics improve as well. And so with the professional sports teams I've worked with, that has meant better winning percentage. With business teams, that has meant quicker decision making, more activity in the pipeline, more profit, those kinds of things. So it depends on what you're measuring. In a school, you're measuring things like how well are the kids performing academically. And so you would expect that good professional learning communities and teaming and faculty is going to give those kids the best chance for those tools. But we won't know that until later on. And usually that's a retrospective measurement anyway. I was working with a group who was, their goal was to increase the retention of the employees they recruited. But we couldn't measure it until after the intervention had happened. And it doubled, but we didn't know that at the time. And so I want to find out if the reading and math at or above grade level scores have changed a year from now, 2 years from now, compared to last year, because I would expect there to be a relationship.
Excellent. Thank you.
Sounds good.
Been
that
a good
was a
experience.
Long 15 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Been a good experience.
Interesting, isn't it? Yeah, very interesting. I think it's been a unique opportunity. We didn't ask for the opportunity, and when it was delivered to us, I think it was surprisingly rich in its, you know, how far it can reach and what it can produce. I think that we have to be careful always between the before and the after. We are very proud of years and years and years and years of high production, tremendous scores. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not looking at this as black and white, like this, we were this way, and people yeah. make that very clear. We came in and we were a high-functioning, very healthy staff that was authentically dealing with things that no one was embarrassed about, but it's like a good marriage, you know, mm-hmm. you're going to shove it under the carpet or you're going to really acknowledge it. Mm-hmm. And so we were acknowledging things, and we had many wonderful opportunities. I appreciate the exercise point of view because we're also asking, you know, we've been in a lot of sessions, you know, and we haven't had as much time maybe to work it through. We're taking the nuggets and the discussion points and being a high caliber staff, we're hoping it's hitting the fertile ground. Mm-hmm. We're already geared for excellence. So it's not like we've suddenly become excellent, mm-hmm. but I think it's really honing and refining an excellent staff, and authentically looking at challenges as we move forward and really fearlessly. I mean, there's no, we're very proud of the efforts that have been done and look forward to continued excellence, and that will obviously incorporate our children. We're all united in the fact that our children are the reason that we're all here. Our students are the reason we're here. We've always been proud of our efforts, and we continue to look forward to an excellent,
excellent time with them. Excellent. Thank you. Thank you, Mary. Thank you. Nice to meet you.
Let everyone get situated here. Okay, with our revamped agenda schedule, we're going to go into action items next. And so first we have the consent agenda. Are there any items board members would like to move from the consent agenda to be considered separately?
Steve, I have no items that I'd like pulled. Thank you.
Thank you, Board Member Kenwood. Hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented, which includes the following items. The Human Resources Personnel Report with employment recommendations, internal transfers, and resignations. Also, the board minutes from the March 21st, 2011 regular meeting, and also the closed session meeting minutes.
Motion.
Aye. Moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
Solak?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Vondra?
Yes. Okay. Concerning the superintendent's recommendations, there are no additional items for recommendation that are recommended for action this evening. So next up, we have the superintendent's report.
I will make this relatively brief. Your enrollment report is in your packet, and you see very little change in our enrollment. It stays the same as pretty much as it always is. I did want to give you an update on the last LEND meeting. Simply because there's a lot of activity going on right now in Springfield that I want to make sure that we stay abreast of. So there are really a couple of significant pieces that we'll want to keep our eye on. One is the consolidation conversation that is occurring, and there's really perhaps two ways of looking at this. One is Governor Quinn wanting to come in and eliminate the regional offices of education and redistrict all of our school districts without input from the local school district. And I think that there is probably very little support for that kind of movement, simply because there are so many local issues associated with a consolidation. There are two other a senator and a representative that have introduced new legislation. Senator Garrett was presenting, working on some legislation that would increase the expectation for partnering and intergovernmental relationships. And we already do a good deal of that, and so we see that there's merit in that kind of approach. And then consolidation as it is appropriate around that. And then Chapalavia has also introduced legislation to create a commission to look at the consolidation question and to make sure that the stakeholders are included, because previous to that, that has not been the case. I mean, they've not, the Quinn proposal and some of the subsequent proposals have not included stakeholders, i.e. board members, superintendents, people from the community who will be affected by consolidation. So I wanted to give you that update. The reform work that has been underway in several different venues, one coming from the legislation, one coming from IEA, AFT, and another one coming from and perhaps is blended somewhere with the Alliance, which is the state proposal, but Stand for Children. There really are three different stances on the education reform package, which has to do with teacher tenure, has to do with evaluation and performance, has to do with seniority, any number of things, and that work is well underway. But we won't see anything probably by the end of this month. But there's a good belief that the Alliance legislation, in conjunction with Accountability for All, which is the IEA AFT legislation, will somehow find its way into a blend, and that by the end of May, there will probably be some significant new legislation surrounding evaluation, performance, and tenure. It doesn't appear at this point collective bargaining is going to be a highly limited area or an area that they're going to go after, similar to what we saw in Wisconsin. And then finally, there have been some conversations about pension reform and the fact that the state for this year is significantly behind in its responsibility to fund the pension of TRS employees, at least for our benefit, TRS employees. And there has been some talk of passing that that cost onto school districts to a significant increase. And so Lend is, of course, opposed to that, and there will be strong opposition to that. And then budget matters are still very much unknown, and we don't expect to know or hear much about the budget until at the earliest the end of May. But there is some conversation about putting greater responsibility on the constituents within the House and the Senate. In other words, the different committees actually having having some voice in how the budget dollars are allocated. And in the past, we've heard from our Congress men and women that I really don't have any insight or any input into the budget. I'm kind of a hands-off. And this year, there it does seem to be some momentum coming from both Cross as the Republican leader and Madigan as the Democratic leader to say, look, we've got to put our hands into this conversation. We've got to put some meat around that. So that would be a very interesting shift if that happens in the budget development. So that's my update.
Okay, thank you. So at this time now we have individual board member reports. Does anyone wish to give a report?
Just a quick update. We mentioned 2 weeks ago, and I sent an email to Dan and Ann and Maureen that Dan and I are going to begin to review Section 8 of board policy, which is community relations, with an eye towards some of the conversations we've had. So we're going to start that, see as elections come tomorrow, how that shifts the board, but at least start to dig into that, and that would be the last policy section that we would address with this board.
Okay, anyone else? Okay, next up we have our discussion items. We have three items. First is the 2011-12 copier bid results.
This is something that you see on a regular basis. If you have any questions about this bid, I'm going to defer to Bob on it because I think he's a little easier to listen to than I am tonight.
We just discussed it today in finance.
Yes. Not the paper.
No.
We discussed
The
actual copy.
The actual copy.
We
discussed
the paper
in finance as well.
Okay.
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago.
I'm just curious, do any of these companies that provide the paper have any programs for recyclability and discounts or anything? Or right now we just recycle it and somebody takes it away?
Well, we have a program in place with Waste Management, our disposal company, and they have a recycling plant in place for all of our disposal. We just dispose of it and they recycle it when it gets back to their facility. There is a plan in place for these. No, these are end-line sellers.
There's a requirement on the paper, though.
There's a requirement on the paper that so much of it is of pre-used paper, previously used paper. But generally speaking, we have an agreement where the disposal company takes care of that.
I didn't know if any of these suppliers are moving towards the model of recycle with us, get a 5% discount.
Now, again, these are end-use sellers. They're not the actual producers. So I think that would be something we'd be looking for in a production.
That'd
be
18.
So, yeah, we'll
We'll have the action on this coming next full board meeting. Okay, next up is the smart board rollout.
Smart board rollout, as you've heard from Mike as part of his long-range technology plan, the smart board rollout is something that we want to shorten the time frame on and not have it go over, you know, a lengthy period. And so Mike has developed a relatively aggressive plan that's also economical and affordable for us to roll out smart boards next year and in the years after that. Finance has discussed this, and if there are any questions, I'll defer to Mike.
I mean, we've talked about this at every meeting for the last 2 months, so I get it gone.
I just would like to see us pay this as a one-time rather than a leasing option, just because, you know, when I look, I know we had talked a little bit about in terms of budgeting, I think it would be more appropriate to be a one-time item. And then also just for the lease, it's not like at the end, you know, it's not like this is a huge expense item that we can't pay for right now, or it's not something that we're expecting to just use for a couple of years and then get rid of. So that would just be, that's something I'd like. And also the amount of savings we'd see, you know, it just doesn't make sense to me.
What is the amount of savings?
Yeah, I know that you asked that question, and I'm just looking at my notes from, Mike, when you did your report out. So why the dollar buyout versus the pay up front?
Well, the dollar buyout, in that case, we would own the equipment at the end of the week. So mm-hmm. Just pay a dollar and then go. We didn't really discuss a single payout, one-time payout for all the equipment. Mm-hmm. Most of the bigger purchases now that we have done have been on a lease basis. It also affords us a placeholder for future rollouts for other emerging technologies. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of built into the budget.
So it gives some flexibility if on year three you see something else that we might want to get further down the line, that can be included versus...
As that lease falls off, correct. There could mm-hmm. be another emerging technology that we feel is important to invest in, and then that money would be able to be
mm-hmm. Or it could be an upgrade of the smart boards.
It could be a replacement of the projectors that we have in the construction. Those have been rolled out in years previous. By the time we get the smart boards rolled in, we might need to look at replacing some of the projectors. That was phased in over about a 4 or 5 year period. So at that point, they're going to be 6 or 7 years old in some cases, and provide us a placeholder for those kinds of replacements.
Because what I heard, when Dan, you asked the question before, what I didn't hear you say is that the value of paying it up front was greater than what you perceive the value is to do it over time in order to have the flexibility in these other pieces. Is that, I'm assuming that's still
accurate? Right, and also, it leaves us some wiggle room for that year as well, so we don't have to pay a huge expenditure against the technology budget.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you're comparing what, the 106 versus 3 times 23,000?
I think the total point.
What is the interest rate on the lease?
4.5%, 5%. And the interest rates may fluctuate
right
within the next couple of months, given it's a placeholder for 30 days. So the way the interest rates are fluctuating right now, that could change.
Yeah, I mean, you have to say the money that you're not spending up front is sitting in the bank, too. So, I mean, it's I understand that, too, but it's...
You know, like when I have to do project presentations, I look at the end of 5 years, will you have spent more or less? And if you pay for it outright at the end of 5 years, you will have to pay less.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I look at that, and then, you know, because I had asked Dan, you know, I said... You gave me the comparison up, but this is like when we did the social studies books, you know, here's a one-time thing, and those are like usually $100,000, so I'm seeing some similarities here. And so I guess that's why I'm just saying, you know, why don't we just pay for it now and be done with it rather than, mm-hmm. you know, we're going to lose, you know, sure it's only a few $1,000, but we already have the budget for it. It's not like we're hurting for it or, you know, we want to spread this expenditure out because we're worried about some huge shortfall. I mean, this is fairly small. compared to the overall pool. And maybe that's a, you know, maybe that's a board policy thing of leasing versus buying, but
I think it's the total picture of the technology budget and the various things that are trying to be achieved in that budget over the course of the next 5 years. Let's just say 3 years because that's an easier framework for technology. And so if we pay for things outright, we'll be able to pay for perhaps one thing. It makes your rollout go much slower and you'll be able to do much less. And I think that's been some of the philosophy behind looking at leasing as an option that allows us to roll things out more quickly and then maintain them if that's appropriate with that dollar buyout. But, Mike, I'll let you.
Conclusion either of this is still another phase that would come in next year. I don't anticipate the dollar amount to be quite as high, but it would still be a significant dollar amount. Prepared to do a one-time buyout for that as well. So this kind of, this way, it kind of brings both of those projects in some alignment because we can blend those two leases to expire at the same time. Like you say, it provides sort of a placeholder for us for other emerging technologies and other updates that I know we're going to need within the next 7 years.
Mm-hmm. It provides us greater flexibility as we move forward through, you know, multiple years of budgets. Mm-hmm. I think that's the desire behind this, is allowing us the flexibility as we move forward.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, Dan. I think, I guess what I'm hearing is that's one element, and you make a good point that you have the dollars, why not just pay it and be done with it? I guess what I've been trying to listen to is there's the programmatic operational aspect of it, and you have different goals in mind. In order to be able to do that. So there's that piece of it that I'm trying to hear.
And it does leave that money available during that 3 year, 5 year period. So rollout like this, we do anticipate the boards to be around for longer than 5 years. So it allows us to kind of stretch those payments out over 5 years and kind of use that flexibility to pay some of that money annually for anything else that may come up.
Mm-hmm. Right, but I mean, the amount is so small, you're talking $20,000 a year. I mean, I could see it for stretched in, or if at the end of the lease, it's 50% residual value or something. But sounds like that's just my opinion.
Well, you could make that argument, the amount either way. I mean, I would think, from a simplicity standpoint, budgeting with leasing is a simpler way to look at it. I've got X amount for technology every year, and I just continue these leases versus here's a chunk over 5 years. Not for the next 5 years, you have to kind of look back and say, well, I spent X amount on that already, you know, because every year you're not going to go make a big, you know, right, chunk. With the lease, you know, it's set in the budget at a set amount every year.
But you can do more.
Excuse me?
You can do more. You have greater capacity to do more with a leasing program.
And I think my philosophy was kind of what we had when I first came here. And the result of that is you have 5, 6, 7 year gaps where equipment wasn't refreshed, and the budget money wasn't there for it. So part of the reason we're going with this approach is so we don't wind up back in that kind of situation. We're looking at aging technology that hasn't been refreshed in years because there's never been a budget for it or a placeholder for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the leasing is pretty common for most school districts.
Most are moving to this model.
For technology.
Yeah. Just because of the flexibility it provides you for multiple years.
Do we get better, like, warranty options? I mean, are there any of those type of incentives either?
With leasing versus buying? I don't think so.
No. With the warranty, we work with our vendors.
And this is the vendor, too, that does the training?
Yes.
Provides free training?
Yeah. Taking advantage of this training.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Mark.
Any other questions there? Okay, next up we have the intergovernmental agreement with Marquardt School District 15 for food services.
I'd like to point out that at your table are the two intergovernmental agreements that were inadvertently not contained in your packet, so you'll have those to review between now and the next board meeting. But we have been working with District 15 for the last several months to look at the possibility of an intergovernmental agreement around food service that would allow us to enter into the federal lunch program, which is a higher reimbursement for the district in terms of food service, and it also allows us to offer hot lunches to students who are both free and reduced. And ultimately, maybe the biggest bonus is that it allows us to bring hot lunches into our elementary schools. So the reason that you have two intergovernmental agreements before you is that the first one would be for the 2011-12 year and would include the food service program in Marquardt and Hadley. And we would just really replicate our current program. Free lunches at the elementary school would still be cold lunches, and then the hot lunch program at Hadley would be replaced with the federal lunch program. And then the following year, we would add, for the last 2 years of the agreement, all of our elementary schools and our junior high into a hot lunch program. So if you have questions, Bob can speak further to that. But we're very excited about this possibility. We think it's in the best interest of our school district. It will save us some money, and it will be great for kids, you know, very healthy lunches.
Can I ask, it sounded like when I went through this, able to offer hot lunches, but we're still able to reduce our costs. And that's because we're getting more money from
right.
the federal government.
Additional reimbursement.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know how to say this, but it seems to me that the hot lunch stuff that I see is just not very nutritious. Hot dogs, pizza, burgers.
Well, when you go to the National School Lunch Program, there's a composite lunch that must be served. You know, our kids can go in and kind of pick and choose what they want now, and that'll be completely different than what we're going to move forward with.
I go back, though, to what's healthy that's high.
Well, they have to meet the federal guidelines, which are pretty strict, and there are new guidelines that have been put in place for implementation this spring. So really, everybody's going to have to switch. But the program that they've had in place has met those guidelines, you know, for several years before. There's no fried foods. There will be pizza on occasion. There might be a hot dog that they, you know, turkey hot dog rather than a beef hot dog. Or so it's not going to look like just broccoli and carrots and
no, I mean, that sort of thing. But picking up all the fried stuff.
They're taking the fryers out.
We haven't been using the fryers. I mean, they've been baking. I mean, even the chicken poppers are baked. They're not fried. They have been fried in years. And also with the switch over to the new food service, nothing would be fried.
So we think this is a healthy alternative as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Couple things. So, first of all, if I understand correctly, so we will no longer be using Aramark?
Correct.
Okay. And, in terms of the nutrition, I think one of the observations that a lot of people have made about the lunches and what's been served, there's been a big improvement over the last couple of years from Aramark. With the quality and the nutritional value of the things that are there and offered. I think some of it, though, we as adults need to be much more realistic about what our expectations are for the children to be eating a healthy lunch. Like anything, it can be offered, but they don't necessarily take it. And I've actually been at Hadley last few months at lunchtime and you see it. And so, what's being offered, you know, I see, unfortunately, a lot of fresh fruits and vegetables and the healthy foods tossed into the garbage by the kids, whether it's those getting free and reduced lunch, or if there are kids who are bringing lunch from home. I appreciate the concern that we all have for this healthy, the requirements, but we can't shove the carrots on the kids' throats, and we can hope that the food is baked and the quality is there, but kids are going to eat what they're going to eat.
Is it required by the program that here's your square meal, take it, and then like Tara said, the broccoli is going to be in the garbage.
And I'm not saying that and my guess is it's the new food pyramid, and so the lunch has to look like what it is required for the new food pyramid and what the food service. I have to be honest, I get a little nervous because I think of all the wasted food that's going to be hitting the garbage can. Again, not something we can control, and I, from a cost perspective, I understand that. It
seems like you'd almost rather than not take the
back. Exactly. So, I'm not suggesting we don't do this, but I guess there's a little bit more realistic perspective. When you talk to a kid and you say, how is your account at zero? I packed you this monster lunch. What are you buying? Chips. What are you buying? Smoothie. So to me, some of those health issues are beyond what's going on in the hot lunch plate. So that's just my editorial comment. So sorry. My other question though is, how are we going to serve hot lunches in the elementary schools? I don't get that.
They will.
Bunsen burners.
When we move into the elementary schools next year, 2 years from now, those lunches will be prepared hot at Del Mar Court. They'll be transported with insulated containers to the schools. Generally, it's a Camro type of insulated plastic device that comes in wheels, and it just gets rolled out the back of a truck. And then we will have a hot, sort of a steam table type of effect where those foods will be set right in there and served to the children accordingly.
Okay, so... we're hiring more employees to run this program. We're actually going to have to hire people now to do this.
Yes.
Right.
Okay. And then will children who are not part of free and reduced lunch have an opportunity to buy a hot lunch?
Yes.
Okay. And in the cost analysis, I guess I'm just, I don't see it, and maybe it's just me, but so how many people do we, I'm thinking of an employee standpoint now, how many people are we hiring, and, so now that we have full-time employees, that we have salary and benefits that work.
We won't have full-time.
You'd have a server, probably 2 hours a day.
Okay.
They would come in set up the serving tray, serve, break it down, and go part-time.
Okay.
And you can only have, it can even be that they can make a full-time job out of it because mm-hmm. you're serving lunch at the same time they're all in the building. So it'll be very part-time people at the elementary.
Okay, so they wouldn't be, they'd be non-union employees?
would be, if they're 15 hours, if it's possibly 15 hours, then they would be under the SBA agreement.
Okay.
And 2 hours a day, 5 days a week. So they may be under that. You don't want to get them to get under that, but they wouldn't have benefits.
Okay.
Does the cleaning all happen at the elementary?
No, because we don't have the right kind of kitchen areas in the elementary. Mm-hmm. So basically, what happens is they put the serving trays back in the cameras and they go back to Mark for the cleaning. Mm-hmm.
So how much of the lunch is non-disposable? Just the tray?
Do you mean the actual serving tray for the students?
Yeah, what's brought, what has to go? Is it just a tray, or is there more to the lunch that is not disposable?
The lunch would come in, if they don't come prepackaged on a plate. Mm-hmm. So the server is actually serving the students the components of the hot lunch.
Oh, okay.
Using a buffet table, a hot buffet table.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so... What goes back to
I thought they were all individual, and I came.
No.
I'm sorry.
No,
okay.
No. It's not individually packaged.
All right. No.
It's coming in bulk, and then it's being served.
All right.
So that's how I did it in a previous system. So that's how it would actually
okay.
work.
There are.
You couldn't have the cameras for individually plated hot ones.
But there are programs available, like mm-hmm. Justin.
Okay, that's fine. I guess I just misunderstood.
And then the plates, is it real silverware? Okay, so it's disposable silverware.
Right.
Right. So the only thing that really has to be cleaned, or it has to go back to the prep site, is the tray and
utensils.
And then you go back.
In finance, we talked about it a bit, and the process is basically the first thing in the morning, the teachers ask, all right, who's getting lunch today? They raise their hand and they send the number over to Mark Ward. And that's how they figure out how much food.
Right.
And the menu's available, you know, ahead of time. So
a month at a time.
You basically can pick and choose which hot lunch your kids are going to have.
Yeah, I do. I don't doubt that this is a well thought out system. I know they do it. I've worked hot lunch in the elementary schools, and 95% of the kids who have no clue, it's always my mom ordered hot lunch. So I'm just, it is what it is.
Well, I would guess that given a district like ours that has never had a hot lunch program, it will take a little adjusting too for the children who pack their own lunches each day. Children who are used to getting lunches at school will have the option of a hot lunch, which they don't have now. And, the experience that Mark Ward has described to us, and I think, all of us who have worked in other systems would say that hot lunch usually just grows and grows and grows as it becomes available. And for working parents, that's often a nice benefit for them to have, to be able to say on any given day, gee, I didn't make lunch today here, Well, it'll still be cashless like it is at all of our other places, so you'll have to have money on, in the system, but.
Right, right.
Does the, for the projected cost, and the net program cost, does that include the salaries for the Hadley?
Mm-hmm.
And then, do we know what it's going to be for the elementary?
We didn't go out there. That's
only
the 11-12
program.
We did not go out there.
So next year
it's
just Hadley.
Next year
it's
just Hadley.
So when we vote on this, will we be voting
on this next year? Well, we're asking to vote on a 3-year agreement.
I think that I would like to see that.
The projection.
What a projection for the cost would be for.
Right, and if we're looking at it from a savings perspective, and I understand that, but if we're talking about adding employees into it, I just want to really kind of see what the savings is. I recognize the value of the program. I just trying to understand how it works.
Mm-hmm.
And
in terms of how it works, do you have other questions then?
No, I'm a teaching learner. I'm trying to think of how this is going to play out. And like anything, change is good. And I think this is a great opportunity to provide nutritious hot lunches, because again, I know what the hot lunches are, what the PTA programs are, and it's a great opportunity. And I have worked in, I've observed hot lunch programs in other school systems. I wish there was a way, and it's not just with hot lunch, that we could reduce the amount of wasted food that the kids toss. And there's nothing we can do. It's just
Well, I think there are some ways to introduce the program and do some onboarding for parents as well as children. I mean, at Ben Franklin, they have no waste days, right? So the kids work, they have built in some, I think all of our schools have tried to build in some green and some learning around this. I mean, I would suggest that our kids are more savvy about it than we are because they're more tuned into ecology issues. I think that's my own experience. One of the things I think that's good about this is that, because we have a significant number of free and reduced lunch eligible children, that there's some reality that this could be their hot meal for the day. And that's a good thing. Because mm-hmm. we all know that we've talked to teachers where kids are hungry from the moment they come in. And they're pulling out granola bars, community outreach, provide snacks. We know this story, so I think that could be a positive. And so District 16 hooked into 15. They were in.
They've been with 15 for a couple of years. In fact, District 16 just started their hot lunch program
mm-hmm.
this year.
And that's going well for them. They've mm-hmm. seen some benefits.
Between
days,
yeah.
And Marquardt serves their elementary schools from the common kitchen, too, the same way, don't mm-hmm. they?
Yeah. So we're not the guinea pigs.
No.
Yeah.
Okay, any other questions on the...
Wait, I'm sorry, one more thing. With the Airmark, I can't remember the length of that contract, so...
And we would also note that not out of dissatisfaction with our Airmark are we moving from. We've had really good relationship and service from them.
I was just going to say, I compliment them on the increased nutritional foods, the quality of the foods. The last 2 years that have, they have gone up drastically. I know they did a lot of really good things, so...
Yeah, they rolled out a new program 2 years ago for us, and they did a nice job. Mm-hmm.
Okay, upcoming meetings. We have on April 11th, we have a special meeting at 6 p.m. Central Services to review facilities planning again. And then on April 18th, we have a regular board meeting at Central Services at 7:30. And then on May 2nd, we have a regular meeting at Central Services and also a reorganization meeting from any new board members from the election tomorrow. So, are there any other matters to be considered by the board?
I have no matters.
Okay. At this time, are there any other members of the public who wish to address the board? Seeing none. The board has determined it does not have a need to adjourn to closed session at this time. So, may I have a motion to adjourn the April 4th, 2011 board meeting?
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, meeting adjourned.